Thank you, Keith. Jackie was cleaning the fish. These Al-Anon have problems, you know. I'm George Sherman, from Grateful Alcoholics. Hi, everybody. I appreciate the committee, Bo and Robert, and all the ones that CD got me to come over and share with you. I really appreciate that. To my left here, sitting in this little chair, is a good friend of mine named G.C. Harrell from White Oak. Some of you know him, some of you don't. G.C. just celebrated his 11th birthday yesterday. Y'all give him a big hand. Love you, G.C. and Sue. Appreciate you. Thank you, Keith, for the warm introduction. We're supposed to tell our stories in a general way, what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I seen Po' Boy out there, and the man from Matter, I can't think of his first name, it don't really matter. And upstage you, them two people, I don't know who you got. You know, you should have them up here talking instead of me, because they do have a wonderful story, and I enjoyed them last time they were in our ear talking. Can you hear me in the back? Back there. I was afraid of that. CD told me earlier that it'd be about a large crowd tonight. And I don't know if something happened, CD. It's only about 3,000 people here. And I want to go to Texas to talk, you know, and I like to talk to big crowds. It helps my humility. I'm really overcome. Like some of you out there, I was born, and things after that, it really got bad. I tell this at most of my meetings now. We had a fellow in Glenn County. Really, my alcoholism, when I come out, I was in trouble. But we had a fellow in Glenn County named Jim. I won't call his last name. Old Jim, he come to Homerville one night. That's my group. And I'm from Fargo, but I go to the Homerville group. But anyway, Jim come over and talking one night. He said he was troubled from the beginning. He said that he was born in Glenn County, in the marshes of Glenn, in around 1931-32 in January. And a granny woman delivered him. He said his daddy had to go across the marshes in a mule and wagon and get the granny woman at the wee hours of the morning. And he picked up the granny woman. It was cold, northeaster blowing, and Jim said he brought the granny woman into the cabin where they lived, and his mom was having these pains, you know, and said Jim was about to come. And said the granny woman reached in and pulled Jim out and held him up by his feet to, you know, slap him, and he took one look at him and slapped his mama. And really, that's my life story, too. I was really born and raised in Fargo on the wrong side of the railroad track. And a few years later, my mother wished I'd have tried to cross it, you know, a few times because of my trouble I'd caused her. But I think really tonight, people, I'd like to say this. My character defects preceded my alcoholism. I think our alcoholism a lot of times is a cover for our character defects. I know I had these character defects before I had my drinking problem. I remember real young, I'd lie and I'd cheat and I'd steal. I never would steal anything heavy because I was scared of getting a hernia, you know. I'd always something light. But I would do this, but my character defects were first. They were significant, and they're significant today because I have to watch these character defects. Because they're still with me. I have to really be conscious of them. But my story tonight, I'll start off. I'm sorry, Jackie, my Al-Anon, she couldn't make it tonight. She told me to send your love, all of you. And but anyway, I graduated from Clinch County High School in 1951. And no, I didn't. I told a damn lie. I'm sorry. I was expelled from Clinch County High School in 1951. I still have problems with that line, but I mean, I'm working on it. I'm really out. And I was expelled for doing something today that would have been, you know, accepted. I won't tell you all what it was. Maybe after the meeting I'll tell you, but I won't tell you now. But I was expelled, and soon after I was expelled from high school, I joined service, and soon after that, I married this little crazy girl from Homerville. And the reason to say she's crazy, she married me, you know, and then not long after that, she went into shock, and she's been with me for 34 years. And that says something for Jackie. But we married, and I moved away and went in service and moved over to Pensacola and had 4 years of the Navy, and I was honorably discharged in 1955, and my drinking, now, listen, people, the way I drank, I could never take one drink. If you'd offer me a can of beer, I wouldn't take it. I had to have enough to finish the job. And my drinking in service wasn't too bad, but I'd got in some trouble with it. But coming back to Fargo, I heroes welcome. I was during the Korean War, and they welcomed me home. Never did go to sea. I don't know what happened, but I was in the Navy. I never did get to sea. But they welcomed me back to Fargo, and I come into Fargo and open up a bait and tackle business, and my drinking increased. And by this time, my family had increased. I found out what was causing this to happen, and I'm not even Catholic. We've got 5 children, you know. And we quit that long latter part of my drinking, or I quit it. Jackie, she probably could have still done some of it, but I quit. Well, it quits you or something. You know what I'm talking about anyway. But we had 2 children by this time, and I had this bait and tackle business, and I had a good business. I had a zoo there in Fargo. I had all the animals you'd find in the southeastern part of the United States. We had them in there. Bear, raccoon, fox, everything. And I'd wrestle the alligators and I'd milk the rattlesnakes. And when I closed up the business at night, I'd go home drunk. And Jackie said, "Why do you do that?" You know. I said, "Well, honey, it's the rattlesnakes. Nerves, you know, my bad nerves. I'm milking 8 or 10 of them a day and my nerves is bad." That wasn't the reason, but I give her that excuse. And not long after that, she quit asking me about that because of I would give her hell at night, and she quit doing that at night. She'd wait till the next morning, and then she'd confront me, you know. And Jackie weighed about 160 or 50 or 40 pounds, something like that, you know. And in the mornings, not time to talk to a drunk, you know. She'd come in and sit out on the edge of the bed, and I'd roll up under. You can get the picture now. And she says, "I'm going to leave you, George." I said, "For God's sake, do, honey. You know, in the morning, it's a bad time to talk." And I would. I'd beg her to leave me. And we carried on this thing for around 20-something years. She'd leave me, you know, threatened to leave me. She never did. But what I'm saying is this is a family illness, and it affected my wife, and it affected my mother and my father, and it affected my children, even my little kids. They were scared to death of my dad, of their daddy. But I had this zoo, and I had to work, and I thought I did. I put in 15, 16, 17, 18 hours a day at the zoo. And back then, we didn't have much recreation. And like I say, we had some children. But at the zoo, we had this one squirrel, a fox squirrel a fella gave me over in Fargo. And he was a mean squirrel. He was really a mean, ornery squirrel. And we'd turn the squirrel out in the evening and have fun with him. He'd catch people, you know. And we'd turn him loose in the zoo, and he'd run around the zoo and run up, grab a woman by the leg, you know. And back then, women didn't wear these short breeches, you know, these breeches. They wore dresses, and squirrel run up the dress, it'd scare them to death, you know. And then we had fun, you know, just watching the squirrel run. And it'd bite him. Sometimes it'd bite him on the buttocks, you know. And then they'd stomp, you know, and he'd fall down, and old squirrel would get back up, though, and go right back to bed. And we had fun doing that. And this one time in particular, this preacher in Fargo, he was concerned about me and my... I'd introduced streaking about 3 or 4 months before the squirrel incident. And he was worried about my state of mind and about my soul. And he'd been praying for me. And he'd come back and by the zoo and talk to me about my drinking and he'd buy some gasoline. And this one day in particular, the preacher come by and filled up with gas. And the squirrel was out of his cage. We turned him loose, you know, to get some exercise. Preacher told me, he said, "George, the squirrel's out." You know, I said, "Yeah, preacher, he's out." He said, "Let me get him in." So I said, "Preacher, just leave him alone." I didn't really want to leave him alone. But he said, "I'm going to get me a bag of peanuts." He did, and he went to the back end of the zoo to bring the squirrel back with him. And he didn't bring the squirrel, but he went to the back end of the zoo and squatted down. And the squirrel was on a post, if you can get this picture now. And he was coaxing him off and had the Panama hat on. You know how these Baptist preachers are, and persistent as the devil. And the old squirrel jumped off the porch and greeted the preacher off the post, you know, and caught him. And the preacher lost his Panama hat and his religion. And I heard him say some things he shouldn't have said down there. He couldn't get rid of the squirrel. The squirrel eat him up, people. I'm talking about eat him up. He bit him through the chest and scratched him all over the face. The preacher run up to the front of the business there, and he said, George, he said, Lord, have mercy. He said, squirrel like to eat me up. I said, yeah, preacher, you've done a bad job on you. He said, you reckon he's got rabies? I said, preacher, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll cut his head off, cut your head off, and send it to Atlanta. If it come back rabies, I'll kill that damn squirrel. You know, and he got aggravated with me and left. Later on, though, after I got sober, he took me into church, but he really was aggravated with me. During this time, my business at this place was good, but I had a chance to move to Stephen Foster State Park. And if any of you ever been down to Southeast Georgia, hadn't been there, you should attend this state park. It's a beautiful park, 17 miles back in the swamp, and Jackie and I and the two children, well, this time we had the third one. We was working faster. We moved in the park, and I had a wonderful business. I leased the park from the federal government, state of Georgia, and we just had a wonderful time down there. I made plenty of money, and by this time I was able to buy moonshine with a 5-gallon jug, and I'd set it out in the back and pull me out a gallon, you know, to hold me overnight. By this time I'd start to drink at 5 o'clock in the evening, and the next morning, though, the next day I didn't feel too good. And we'd take people in the swamp, and the only people I could get to help me at the park were drunks, you know. And we got to where that every once in a while we'd turn a boat over in the swamp, and we never did have anybody drowned in there, thank God. Usually an alligator would save them, you know. If he didn't save them, it'd make them save themselves, you know what I'm talking about. You'd be surprised. But anyway, I went in there. My insurance was about, I think it was around $50,000. When I left there, 4 years later, it was over $1 million coverage because of this drinking and turning these boats over and showing herself. And it's a shame they had to charge me that much for insurance. You know, it worried me, and I drank more. And I'd like to tell you about my incident. The third year I was in the swamp, the Stephen Foster, Jackie got tired of it, and she moved back to Fargo. And this one night in particular, we'd been watching Gunsmoke in the evening and watching television, but this time we'd had television. And I'd like to bring something in tonight about that. We watched this television every night, and Matt Dillon, that Gunsmoke was on, and the shootout, you know, and old Matt, he'd draw right in the middle of the street, and the dust and smoke, you know, and... You know, there's an old boy named Emory Cawley up in Homerville. He'd already drawed on Mac about 2 months before we had this shootout I got into, and he'd shot Matt, you know, television. Blowed the hell out of the television. But Emory was an alcoholic, too, I think. And he had already shot Matt, and he was out in the swamp telling me about it. He'd come fishing, I killed Matt Dillon, you know. That's great, boy, you know. He was about half drunk. We'd compare notes, you know. But what had happened is we watch these television shows and we become that, you know, drunk. And you know, if you go to AA and you keep going to AA, you become that, you know. There's a difference, you know, and they're really the same. You become what you think and do. And we watch this television day in and day out, you know, and Matt Dillon every night, and we'd be drunk. And Jackie finally left me at the park. And after about a week, you know, not seeing Jackie, I thought she wanted to see me, you know. I knew she loved to smell that moonshine, you know. I'd crawl in bed with her with a full load, you know, that moonshine. I knew she enjoyed smelling it. That's all we could do, just, you know, her smell the moonshine. But I drove back to Fargo this particular night, if y'all can get this picture now, and left this man in charge of my park and went back to see Jackie. And got back there, and Jackie didn't want to see me. So, hell, I said, I'll go back to the park, you know. So I turned around and drove back in the park. And this fellow that I left in charge, C.D., he hauled tail with a state truck. We had a state truck on the park. He just took it and went in the Fargo and got him some liquor. And I got back to the park, and I was really teed off and mad. I heard a truck coming down the road. It was about 30 minutes after I got there. Here he come back. And I said, James, where in the hell have you been? He pulled up out now. He said, I've been to get me some liquor. He said, you about drunk? I said, hell, I'm the boss, you know. And he had a couple of long-haired hippies in there with him in the truck, and they got out. I don't remember. We didn't call them that hippies back then. I don't know what that name was. It don't really matter. It was a bad name. But anyway, old James walked in, and he was an ex-Marine, crew cut and all that, you know, and him about drunk and had a half pint in his hip pocket and walked around behind my desk in this big concession building and whipped out that half a pint. He said, let's take a drink. I said, James, I said, this is State Park, you know. You ain't supposed to drink on State Park. Crazy, I mean, you know how we do, crazy. You know, I said, if you don't put it up, I'm going to shoot out of your hand. You know, and that's the proper thing to do. You know, Mac Dillon, you all understand what I'm talking about? See, we become what we think. And he just whipped it out, and I just whipped my pistol out, and bam, you know. And it scared him. Really, it scared this man. His eyes dilated, you know. And I mean, he went in a total fright. I don't know what happened to them hippies. We never did see them no more. Never did. Now, they were in the building. If they went out the door and went to the right, they're still in an Okanoke swamp. You know, it's a half a million acres and they're from the Ramble Inn, you know. Their beard's probably a little longer now. Anyway, James got his breath. He said, we'll just shoot it out. I said, let's get on with it. Get your damn gun, you know. And we shouldn't have done that. This ain't my building, you know. This ain't my place, you know. And he went and got his 9-shot revolver and come back into the concession building. He said, count to 10 and you start shooting. I counted, run, 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 and my sound like a horse running down through that concession building. But we wanted to get the place dark like they do on television, so we shot the lights out. Really? He'd shoot one and I'd shoot. You know, we'd divide them up, you know. State property, and no, it wasn't costing nobody but taxpayers. No, really, it was my building. We shot the windows out, you know. We had an open air deal going. And I hid behind the desk, and he hid in the kitchen, and we shot at one another. I'd empty my gun, and I'd look, you know. So help me God. The splinters was hitting me in the head. I said, you know, he's liable to hit me directly, you know. I better hide behind this heater over here. The next morning, we had to pull that heater out, people, and replace it. But what I'm trying to bring to your mind here is God was looking out for two drunks that night that couldn't look out for sin. See? I mean, this man was shooting live ammunition. This wasn't, you know, cap pistol. We were shooting at one another. And God was looking out for two drunks that couldn't look out for sin. But thank God I didn't hit him and he didn't hit me. Other than that glass hit him when I shot that bottle, that glass hit him in the face. Nothing. But directly he run out of ammunition and run out the back door. Hollered, Banzai, you know, and we had one of these heavy metal screen doors. He didn't pay any attention to that, you know. I mean, he showed me no respect. He run through that damn door. It cost $150. This in 1960, you know. Lord have mercy. The next morning, the federal government, we heard them, you know, overcoming that stupor. They were outside, said, call Waycross or the president or somebody. They had a massacre down here, you know, the glass all out and the blood. I said, wait just a minute. I said, there has been a small mistake, a misunderstanding. I said, just let's, you know, and we quieten it off. You know how drunk can do it. You know, if we can get to it in time, we can quieten it off. And I got through that. And I said, listen, I will never drink anymore. I'm through. And hell, it was 2 weeks, people, before I took a drink. You know, I mean, quit right then. Right then. Well, I was introduced to AA. Now, listen, this is 28 years ago. I was introduced to AA and it didn't take. Don't know why. You know, just didn't take. Went to the meetings. Listened to all that stuff and didn't take. So I went back and got drunk. And after this, I got in jail. And that drunk put me in jail. I won't go into that tonight. Yeah. Got me out of jail. And I went back to Jackie at the park. And I said, Jackie, I'm through. Really, now this time I'd made up my mind. I'm through drinking. But I'm nervous and I need... Did I say I was a drug addict? I'm a drug addict too. Really. I have problems with pills. But I was real nervous, and people had noticed. I'd take them back in the swamp, and after I quit drinking, the boat was shaking. I said, you got a motor vibrating back there. I said, that's right, buddy. I said, you hit something, you know, and messed up the prop or something, you know. But it was me vibrating. I mean, I was just nervous, you know. You stay on this stuff 10 or 12 years, you know what I'm talking about, and you get nervous when you come off of it. And I told Jackie, I said, I need to see a doctor and get something from a nurse. So I went to Homerville, And I seen a doctor up there named Greer, and he gave me a prescription for pills, and it wasn't but 100, you know, and damn, that wouldn't last long. And I left to spread my business around, so I went to Lake City, Florida, and got another prescription filled, and went to four different Folkestone, Georgia, GC's stomping ground, got me a prescription filled there. I left to pass down, you know, I'm free-hearted that way. I left, you know, let all these doctors have money. And I got me four, you know, pills, just plenty of pills then, but the trouble is you can't take them things after you get high on them in sequence, you know. You get messed up on your count and the time and stuff, and you'll take too many. Something, I don't know why it is, but you really take too many. And I did. I took too many of these pills, and my wife started noticing, you know. The people would come in the park, and I'd go up and talk to them, and she knows I was spitting on them, you know. Not bad, not really. I wasn't spitting really at them. I didn't really mean to, you know. But she'd pull me back. I said, what in the hell are you doing? You know, I'm trying to talk to these people, and, you know, and show them. She said, you're spitting on them. Oh, and that some of we wearing glasses, and the wife, oh, I'm sorry. And, you know, wife dog's glass. Really, I just try to help them. And she knowed I was crazy. You know, she's crazy, too. Little balls come out. Y'all know what I'm talking about. But I could talk fast. I mean, I could, you know, like the man on television, I could, you know, and hell, 90 miles an hour, you know, and whatever I wanted to say, it'd come right out, you know, and jumbled up a little bit, but it'd come out. But the funny thing about it, I took too many of them. Took too many of them, and one Sunday night there, I said, Jackie, I said, the ad machine wasn't working right, you know. I said, hell, I'm losing my mind. She said, I know it, you know, and she agreed with me. So she rushed to the hospital in Homerville and carried me in there, and this fella pumped me out. And I woke up 7 days later. I come out of the private room, you know, nothing but the bed and the mattress and me and long sleeve sweater, you know. I had damn near tore my own county hospital up. I had nearly tore it up. I'd scratched the nurses, and, you know, they said I was fighting communists. And everybody was communist, you know. Well, I don't remember. But what I'm trying to say is God gave me another reprieve, you know. 7 days I was gone, and I come back. Now, I could have been gone forever. Jackie thinks sometimes I am gone forever. But, you know, God, see how He works in our lives. Well, we sold out at Stephen Foster State Park, and we moved to Camden County. I bought a shrimp boat, and that's a good investment, people. If you don't believe it, check the price of shrimp, you know. But that's the reason it's a damn high, because of that shrimp. It's bad business. Don't get the shrimp boat. Oh, Jesus, have mercy. Every time when I go to a seafood place, I get chills, you know. I break out in a rash on account of shrimp, you know. I'm allergic to it. I lost my shirt, a pair of breeches. I even lost the money that didn't pay tax on. I never did pay tax back then. I lost the government's money in that damn bill, you know. I don't like to pay taxes, really. I do now, but I don't like to. But anyway, what I'm saying, by this time, I was in trouble. We bought a place at Camden County, a big two-story colonial home down there, and Jackie finally, she just lost her mind, and we put her in a mental institution. And she'd worked for it. I mean, she earned that rest, you know. She did. Give her some shock treatments, I think, 32,000 votes. Wasn't enough. She'd come back, you know. Well, what I'm saying is, you know, it's a family illness. I had kids sick. I was sick. And alcoholism and drug abuse is what done it. I wound up at Crooked River, and I was in trouble spiritually, mentally, and physically. I swear. And I didn't know what to do. And I went home to see my mother in Fargo. I said, Mama, what can I do? You know, you always turn to Mama. You know, I'm good, I tell you, blue-eyed, I tell you. Said, son, the only thing I can tell you to do is pray. I got back in my car, drove back to Crooked River, pretty close to where G.C. lived, and got on my knees one night about 12, 1 o'clock, wee hours of a Monday morning, you know, wee hours. And I tried to pray, and I couldn't. And I said, well, the hell with this. I'll kill myself. I was ready. And I said, I'm going to kill myself, and I walked. Started through the hall to get my gun, and a voice spoke to me. Now, this is crazy, but it's true. And he said, go back and pray. And he spoke to me twice, go back and pray. And it scared me to death, people. I mean, you know, I never hallucinated before, and I don't know what. I was sober at the time. And it scared me. But I know there's a God in the universe, and He's... He loves me. He sent me back. He brought me back from the brink. I went over there and knelt in this chair, and I said, "Oh, Lord, my God, have mercy on me." He did. Light come in the room, illuminated me, blinded me, changed my heart. I had a heart. I hate for blacks, Jews, Catholics, non-alcoholics, you know, people that mess with my drinking, church, police, hated everybody. But God took that away from me in one sweep. That light blinded me. And I got up and then I called my mama and said, "Mama, something happened to me." And people, let me tell you something. I stayed sober for 3 years. And I walked and talked and told people about the Lord, you know, and everything was wonderful. But I didn't have AA. I didn't have the fourth and fifth step of this fellowship. All that baggage that I've been carrying around, the old bad things I've done, I'd wore it, you know, like a cloak, and it was killing me. After 3 years, three wonderful years, I started back. Terrible. And it got worse. I started making the jails then in Camden County. And you know, things don't get better, people, for us. It don't get better. God's running us into a jam all the time. You know, if we live long enough, He's going to fence us up. I told Jackie after 3 years, I started back to drinking, and I said, "Listen, if you go with me to Colorado, I won't never drink anymore." You know, that's a damn lie. You know how you'll do them. In hell, I was in Alabama before I took my first drink. You know what I'm talking about. We took off. Had a 38-foot house trailer and a big old truck and a van, an automobile. And we took off that to Colorado. Now, a damn woman with a house full of youngins following a drunk to Colorado. That's insanity. You know, she's crazy. Really, I'm serious about it. You women are crazy. God, you're crazy. And she's the craziest of the crazy. We got to Colorado, Raton Pass. That's New Mexico. And my truck broke down. And it was Easter Sunday. It started snowing. Jackie started crying. "You know, well, you know how these women are emotional as hell, you know, and me with a can of buds. You know what I'm talking about. Shut up, woman. Keep your damn mouth shut. Quit. You're wet in the seat, honey. You know, them tears." Anyway, we moved over to Colorado and found a little town named Walsenburg. And we drove my car back to get this 38-foot house trailer. We left the children at Walsenburg in a little old hut up on the hill. The little pueblo, you know, a little place. Bad looking. God Almighty. I think the Indians, they left it because, of, you know, it was bad. I'm talking about the Indians wouldn't even live in it. We went back to get that house trailer and started up this mountain, people. I'm talking about it was a mountain. I don't mean one of these South Georgia hills. It was a mountain. And the lining in the car, you know, just started slipping. I said, "My God, we ain't going to ever make it." You know, I went to fright. You know what I'm talking about? Total fright. And I flagged the log truck up there. And I said, "Would you pull us up this mountain?" And he knew I was crazy. I went out and hooked the chain to it, and he pulled me to the top of that mountain. And he said, "You can make it from here," he did. "You damn right you can. You better believe you can make it off the mountain, people." Jackie was sitting there, and I had that Budweiser, you know, and I said, "I'm going to rearrange this furniture in this, you know, trailer where it'd ride better, you know, and put some weight on my car." Shouldn't have done it. Left that damn thing alone. But I put too much up in the front, the weight. We started down that mountain. And all I did was release the brakes. I didn't drive it, really. And it got faster and faster and faster and faster. I said, "I got to slow this thing down some way. Jesus, you know." And I looked off over there and there was a bird. No, it wasn't. It was a 747. Way down yonder. I said, "Lord, have mercy." And I put on my brakes. I was about 70, you know, and the trailer done that. I said, "Lord, have mercy." You know, I said that again. And a little old Volkswagen passed me. And they was in total fright because they knew something was bad was fixing to happen. And after the Volkswagen, here comes the trailer. Jackie said, "There comes the trailer," you know. And it passed. Thank God it did. Y'all ever heard of a tumblebug? That's what that trailer done, a tumblebug right down that mountain. I mean, just tore it all to hell, but... What I'm saying, God turned up, you know, God just had that thing turn us loose. And we stopped at the trailer, you know, down there. And I got out and throwed that beer can away and told her, "Are you driving?" She said, "I was." You know, she's total fright right on. And she did. State Patrol come up there and said, "Who's driving this vehicle?" Jack said, "I was," you know. We cleaned out the car, you know, before we could get there. It was bad shape, that car was. Particularly the driver's side. I'm going to tell you what, Peter. That was bad. He said, you know, state patrol are smarter than you think. You think they're dummies? No, they're pretty damn smart. He told Jack, he said, listen, lady, he said, I know you wasn't driving this car. He said, that fella right there was, you know. And he said, if I ever catch you on the Colorado Highway, I said, we're going to put you back in one of them damn jails. They won't never see you anymore. And I was scared, you know, scared to death. So we went on to Walsenburg. They took a record and pulled that trailer on there, and we sold it for scrap. But this time, Jackie started coming to her senses, you know. Well, up in that mountain there. But I was drinking more and more and more. And finally, my mama and my oldest daughter come out there and got Jackie and the young'uns, left me and a damned old dog in that mountain up there. By ourselves in that old truck, you know, and it wouldn't run. And I was crying, you know, and, well, y'all leave me, you know. And I had an old dog. We found an old dog named Moo Moo there. And he's a big old dog, pretty dog. And old Moo Moo, he sympathized, you know, look at me like that. And I seen him drive off down through there, you know. I said, Lord, have mercy, they've left me out here in the wilderness to fight these Indians. Well, listen, they left me, and that night, though, well, that evening, let me explain this. That evening, I went to old Moo Moo and got him a bunch of lamb chops. It was kind of spoiled, and I fed my dog before supper, you know. Well, I went to bed and fed Moo Moo, and I went to bed. Didn't need to eat nothing, you know, I was about drunk. That night I went to hallucinate or something. I'd hear things in that house, you know. And I'd start shooting at it. I had a high-powered rifle and I'd shoot at it. And all the lights throughout them Indians turned the lights on in the villages all around. Heard that shooting, you know. And old Moo Moo, he'd come to the door and look at me. And I'm all right, Moo Moo. But that thing got worse and worse. And finally I said, to hell with this. I backed my truck up that house and loaded all that furniture by myself. Now, it was stove and refrigerator. I don't know how I done it. Don't really matter. Loaded that truck up, put Moo Moo up there on the seat by me, got my pint and took off, going back to Georgia. We started down the mountain. Old Moo Moo got scared, I reckon. He started passing methane gas. Really. Them lamb chops had really started. And old Moo Moo, about every 5 minutes, he had, you know, and I said, Moo Moo, and I started crying, you know, it got so bad I cried. I said, Moo Moo, please don't do that to me. You know, I said, I love you, old dog. I'm going to kill you, bastard. You and I'd hang my head out the window. And he'd ease off, and I'd roll it back up, and I'd drive a while. You know, Moo Moo would look at me strange, you know, and some old methane, and I couldn't stand it. People, it'd scorch the air, you know. And hell, it was in Wisconsin somewhere, he run out of gas. Run completely. I run out of liquor. We stopped at a truck stop. Let me tell you the end of this story. We stopped at a truck stop, and I went in to get a shower and wash that methane. It'll leave crust on, you know, and let Moo Moo out to walk around and stretch, you know, make sure he's through. And I took a bath and got through and come back out and asked the tenant, I said, where's my dog? He said, he's right down there. He's on the interstate highway. He said, in a cupboard down there. And I went down there. I said, come on, Moo Moo. He jigged his damn head. He had plenty of sense. I said, come on, let's go. And I'd walk towards him, he'd walk off. I'd stop and he'd stop. And you know, that dog had more sense than I did. He didn't get back in that truck. He's still in Texas. Well, I come back to Fargo, Georgia, and me and my wife live happily ever after. Oh, hell no, I didn't either. She was so glad to see me, you know, she put me in a damn mental institution. I mean, right off. Really, if you think... As I talk to you tonight, you think I'm well educated. Well, I am. I've been through some of the finest institutions in South Georgia. You know, the VA hospital for the mentally insane and Georgia Regional Hospital. And then I went to the Alcoholism Treatment Center. You know, I'm well educated. But anyway, they sent me off to Augusta, Georgia. That's the VA hospital for the mentally insane. And that's a trip in itself. Anybody ever been to Augusta? VA hospital? Oh, don't be bashful. Tell the damn truth. Come on. Just raise your hand. Thank you. There's an honest one back there. No, look, he didn't raise it. Anyway, I went to Augusta, but let me give you this little experience now. There's a fellow named Cheryl Paul from Willacoochee, and I, we went to Augusta together. And it was a 32-day course, and we finished that course in 2 weeks, C.D. Really, so help me. I mean, we was fast. You know how fast we get. And we learned how the 12 steps, and we had the psychology and psychiatry and all them food. So we got it. We have got this course. And always, just don't drink. and go to AA or something like that, you know, whatever that is. I went back to Fargo, Georgia. He went to Willacoochee, and we corresponded. You know how your old comrades, you know, go to school at college. And we never did get in the fraternity part of it, but we did correspond, you know. And he quit calling me. He'd call me on the telephone, and he quit calling me. For about 2 months, he didn't call me, and I didn't know where to reach him. So I drove to Willacoochee to check on this fellow. And I stopped at a Shell station, Willacoochee, and I said, "Do any of you know Shell Paul?" Oh, said, "Yeah, we know Shell. He's over in the cemetery." I said, "What?" He said, "Yes, he got drunk the other day, and he hit his family's farm, and he lay down on the bed and vomited and went back in his lungs and drowned him." You know, he died, and I'm living. Well, I went to total fright, went back home and got on the pills, you know. Just had to have something on account of my nerve. Well, I got on Ellerville. Any of you ever taken any of that? That's great. Thank you. That's great. Hey, Joan. Ellerville's good, you know, if you don't take too damn much of it. But Jackie was administering it to me, and she knew if she kept me quiet, you know. And she was giving me most 500 milligrams of the damn stuff. And every morning she'd give me a pill and set me on the front porch, and I'd sit there all day long. Damn yellow flies, mosquitoes eat me up. It didn't really matter. You know, just sit there and rock. Hell, it don't matter what bites you if you got that Ellerville in you. Right, I'd just sit out there and, you know, and rock. And the mailman would come by and wave, and he thought I was nodding at him. Hell, no, I wasn't. I didn't remember it. Don't really matter. But they got scared for me, and they carried me to Savannah Regional and saved my life. No, hell, they didn't. That's a bad place, Savannah. But I wound up in Savannah. This is 1972. And what I'm saying is it's a good place for crazy people. But they put me on the crazy ward, and I woke up after 3 days and looked around. There was crazy people there, really. And I'd never been in a place like this before. Not crazy, crazy. You know what I'm talking about. They was running the walls. And hell, they had tracks all over the walls, you know. And what the tenants was doing was betting, you know. They had a damn betting game and said, "I bet this will win." You know, they had numbers on them, you know, just run the walls. And we'd sit in the middle of the arena and watch it. And I got to where I'd bet some on them, you know, not much. But God put me here for a purpose. I think this is true. I think we're all here for a purpose. You know, we do different things. About the third or fourth day, we was watching a race, and it brought a lady in from Waycross. Her name was Virginia, and they set her at the other end of the little table there, about this long, Keith. And me and a nurse there was talking, you know, talking to one another. And Virginia was sitting at the end. Virginia was probably 55 or 60. I noticed there was something wrong with her, you know. And they always did. You put somebody in place like that, damn sure something wrong with them, you know. But Virginia was doing this fish number. You know, a goldfish. I told that woman, I said, "She's fixing to kick out of here." I said, "Somebody better do something for her." Oh, and that nurse said, you know, said she'd be all right. And the wreck she did. She was all right. But, bah! You know, fell out. And all them crazy stopped the race. You know, that's something I have to stop a race, you know. And they all run up around her there. And I said, her name was Miss Powers. Miss Powers called the station. I said, "This woman needs a doctor. She's turning blue, you know. She swallowed her tongue and quit breathing." I said, "Miss Summers, we don't know what to do." I said, "Hell, I'm a patient here." She said, "Please help us, you know." I said, "Well, has she got any false teeth?" She said, "Yeah, we got them in, you know." And I ran my hand down her, you know, mouth and pulled her tongue out, and she knocked hell out of me. Just bop, wham. And I got out, you know, and got up, and we grabbed her. You know, they're disoriented, they tell me, when they come out like that. I was disoriented. I didn't know, you know, but we grabbed her and carried her and put her in a room. And I told some of them, I said, "Listen now," I said, "y'all watch that woman. I ain't a damn doctor, you know. I'm not even an attendant here. That woman's got problems. I'm going to go to bed. I'm tired, you know. I'd rather." So I go to my room. And I wasn't in there 5 minutes. So I missed the sermon. I said, "God almighty, damn." And some little old woman carried her in the restroom and set her on one of them commodity things. We don't have them in Fargo. And she had done the same thing, swallowed her tongue, turned blue, and didn't know what to do. And they called me, you know, "Let George do it. After a while, they'll learn it." I run in the restroom, and I didn't know it was a shower place, too. And a big old fat woman had no clothes on. I run back out in the hall, and she run up one of them stalls, you know. She went up there head forward, and I don't know whether they ever got out there or not. It don't really matter. But here was Virginia, swallowed her tongue, blue as your dress. And there's a black woman there named Ms. Johnson. I said, "Ms. Johnson, if you hold her jaw down, I said, I'll pull her tongue out. And I held her head back. We operated, you know, just like doctors do it on television. And she knocked hell out of me again. But what I'm trying to say is God puts us in these situations. And I went through hell there, people. And I've been through hell. But I'll tell you this, without tribulation, there's no spiritual growth. Remember that. And even after you get sober, remember, without tribulation, there's no spiritual growth. So you ask God for some trouble sometimes so you can grow spiritually. Anyway, I went back home after this 30-day trip and told my wife I was cured. You know, they gave me a few pills to take, not many, you know, just a couple of handfuls. That's the way they administer them out there. And I went back and people in Fargo, I'd got in another shootout just before I went to Colorado, and people in Fargo were really scared of me. I got shot in that one. But people in Fargo just didn't want nothing to do with George Sermons. You know. Through with me, I'm talking about, sure enough. I'd be walking down the street in Fargo. We do have streets in Fargo. And people would be meeting me, and they'd walk across the street. And, hey, George, you know, I got to go. You know, this wouldn't bother me. I knew there was something wrong. Anyway, I had a sightseeing trip, a fishing trip in Okie Swamp. And that's the only work I had. Every once in a while, I'd get me a little fishing trip in the swamp. And I had a chance to take these two people in the swamp. This was in 1974 by this time, and my drinking and my life was just a mess, people. But I knew I couldn't drink, and I knew I couldn't take pills, but I had to have something. But anyway, I cheered this party in the swamp way back in Big Water, way back in the interior of the Okanoke Swamp, fishing. And they had their whiskey, wild turkey, and they had their wine. And they'd asked me to take one. I said, no, I appreciate it. I don't care for anything. I can't do that. I knew I could. I knew. Well, this time, people I knew I was with, I just couldn't drink. And I begged off. And we fished in the swamp, you know, and really, we were catching some warmouth perch so big they're wearing lipstick. I'm talking about they were full grown. Really. We had so many of them, we had to put them in two piles. That's right. One pile wouldn't hold them. And I'd bait their hook, you know, and I'd say, fish right there. And really, they thought I was Jesus, you know. And they'd catch one. You know. But I knew where the stumps were, you know. Fish right there, and they'd pull one out. And then every once in a while, they'd pass that wild turkey. I said, I think, no. Well, about 12:30 or 1 o'clock, I'd give out. I'd give out. They'd open one of them Budweisers and that, you know, that smoke and that, you know, the effect. They do it on television all the time. You know. He'd pass that wild turkey back, and I'd give up. I said, have me, Lord. You know, I reached in and got me a drink. That's all it took. And I climbed in the front of that boat with him. And they noticed that something changed in my eyes, you know. I threw my pole down, and I didn't give a damn, you know, after one drink. I don't care. It don't really matter with me. They said, Mr. Strong, we got to go. It's about 1. I said, hell no. We ain't going no damn way. We're going to drink something, you know. And one of them, you could see that tear coming down. He knew he was in the boat with a crazy man. I'd open one, I'd drink, you know, and they'd beg me, please, Mr. Sherman, let's go. They knew that they had a crazy man, but and I got drunk. And we started out of Big Water. We was about 14 miles from the landing. Had a 10-horse motor, 14-foot boat, a little old narrow run about like that. And it's just like that through that run. You got to really watch what you do. Sober, I'm talking about. You got to be good sober to get through that. And we was motoring down through there, and they knew that we was in trouble. And I missed the run. And he hit a cypress tree. And that fella in front of the boat just knocked the damn limb out of that cypress. Bam, 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 bam. His glasses on his nose, you know, and the other fella, he messed up the boat, you know, with his knees. And fella, I said, listen, I said, did you know you was on federal property? He said, that's against the law, brushing them damn limbs out of that tree, you know, like that. I'd like to kill him. He said, Mr. Sherman, George, I said, shut up and lay down that damn boat, you know. So we're going in, you know. And they were crying and tearing. I'd heard them. When we got to the landing, though, at Jones' Island, I never did stop. I didn't check on them or nothing, you know, no crow or nothing, but this time I was ready to go on. And I got to the house and said, Jackie, I got to have some help, you know, I'm in trouble. And they did swear I'd want for me, but they didn't know where I went. I went to treatment. It seemed like to me every time the alcoholic gets in trouble, he looks for a hole to get in. Well, I went to a treatment center in Waycross, Georgia. This is May the 22nd, 1974, went to treatment. And I intended to stay there just 12 days, you know, to see how it was, because I'd already been through them others, and I knew all about it, you know. But there's something about it. You know, God has ways to use people, and when He's ready for it, I believe this. I'm Primitive Baptist, by the way, and I believe what's to be will be, whether it ever happens or not. You know, that's what we believe. But I went to this treatment center in May the 22nd, 74, and I stayed there 14 days. I stayed there 2 days longer than I should have. And it was modeled on something like Willing Way. We had the 28 days where you take a step a day. And we went in on the fourth step, I did. And the fourth step is you take that personal inventory. And then the fifth step, you admit to God and yourself and another human being the exact nature of your wrong. I said, I won't ever do that, you know. Well, I might tell a deep mutant and kill him and then admit that and go to prison for every time. Yeah, of course. Well, I'd done some terrible things. But I was a smart tail, you know. I won't say the other. Oh, yes, well, I was a smart ass. I will. I'll say that. And I'd mistreated the folks at the treatment center. And we had a lady in there named Sayerdale, and I was taking her inventory all the time. And I started calling her Sore Tail. And you don't talk about the counselors in treatment or in prison, right, because it'll get back to them. In Sayerdale, it did get back to her that I talked about her. And she got me in the 14th day. We were in this treatment, this room, and I was sitting in there, a 42-year-old man. That's the reason you call me the 42 kid. 42-year-old youngin in treatment when I ought to have been out making my family a living. Here I was in another treatment center trying to get this fellowship, trying to get sobriety. And she looked at me. And she said, you're a sorry, no good son of a bitch. You know, I said, Lord have mercy. Oh, Jesus. And she cussed me more. I mean, she called me some things there I'd never heard in these jokes, you know. I mean, this woman knew how to deflate an ego. And she got my attention. Really. This big ego of mine. I said, oh, Jesus, help me. You know, and I done that and everything, you know. But I come out of there, people, and I said, God, you know, I went to a man named Robert. And I said, Robert, I got to do something about the fourth and fifth step. He said, all right, Jordan, you give me a tablet, you know, and I started taking it, and I did. And I think tonight, if you haven't taken the fourth and fifth step, I'd recommend it to anybody, even Al-Anon, you know. Some of y'all got a few problems, you know, just pitch that in. Anyway, I took it, and Father Gilmore there in Waycross, me and another fella read an inventory of Father Gilmore, and he took a 2-week vacation. So help me. It was rough. I mean, I know. I don't know whether I did it or the other fellow. But he told me in there, and Keith would come and talk, and different ones would talk at the treatment center, you know, and share with us. And they'd tell me about AA and our principles and what we had to do. And they said, George, get in this thing. Get in the middle of AA. And it did. And that's the way it's got to be done. You got to stay in there. And you got to work. And I did. I started 12-stepping people. I started trying to give this thing away. I planted a lot of seed. I've never sobered anybody up, but I planted a lot of seed. I have planted seed literally, people, for 10 years. I've just really one right after the other. And things got better. My family got better. My kids used to, when I was drunk, I'd ask for a glass of water and they'd spit it all over. You know, scared to death, you know. Today, they don't do that. They love their dad. My wife loves me. My friends in AA love me. The police love me. Really? Police love me. That's true. It's hard to believe, but they do. Anyway, things got better. And this is what happened. I got in there and started giving this thing away, and everybody listened to me. I never sobered nobody up, like say in Fargo. There's 250 people in Fargo, and I talked to every one of them about this fellowship. Every one of them. Because they've either made it, drank it, or watched somebody make it. You know what I'm talking about? Everybody's been involved with liquor in Fargo, Georgia. And I've aired AA, I've carried the message. And I spent literally hundreds of miles, thousands of miles, carrying the message. Never did help anybody but George. Thank God. I've been sober 10 years. Well, things got better. I was sober 2 years, and I become our group's GSR. Now, from an SOB to a GSR in 2 years, that ain't bad, you know. Really. Well, the reason I become our group GSR, our old GSR, I was an alderman, he got drunk and couldn't make it to the meeting. He was in jail and couldn't go, so I went in his place, so I took his place. And the sad part about this, he died 2 years later, he died drunk. Another thing I'd like to bring out tonight is we have a lot of people today that get in this fellowship and stay for 4, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, and And some of them not that long and say, you know, I don't really need AA anymore. It don't really matter what you don't need, you know. You owe this fellowship. You owe AA. Everybody under my voice that's ever had a drinking problem, or a wife or a spouse tonight that's had a drinking problem, they owe AA. You'll owe AA the rest of your life, whether you want to admit it or not. I went out to Swamp the other day, and I'll tell this real quick. I had a friend of mine that had been going to AA, and he went 4 years. And I went to Swamp, and he's a mechanic out there, and I said, I haven't been seeing you in AA. He said, well, I don't really need it now, George. He says, I've got church, and I'll maybe go to one meeting every 2 months, you know. Well, that's gratitude, you know. I felt like busting his damn, you know, forgive me. Forgive me. I felt like kidding him. But I everything, oh, my sobriety, my family, the day I'm chairman of the Board of County Commissioners of Clinch County, that's no big deal, you know, really. I got out when I started politicking. You know when I started politicking? When I started 12-stepping. If you want to get into politics, you have to go 12-step some. And hell, you automatically get elected, you know what I'm talking about? Really. Every time you work with a drunk, you touch 40 other people, and hell, I'm running for governor. You know what I'm talking about? Why not? You think about it. I might do that. Can't tell. But AA, I went to AA. But they elect sobriety. And that's great. You know, this thing works. And my office today is right across from the sheriff's office. Courthouse in the building. One more thing I'd like to bring up tonight. I know there's three or four of this. That's all right. I didn't mean to wake you up. That's okay. Forgive me. I'm sorry. Don't touch him. He's all right. Please, don't bother him. Oh, my God. He messed up a... Anyway, listen. AA's working, people. I see it every day. I see it every day. We had a man in Brunswick, Georgia named T.C. Hope. He died of cancer about 2 years ago. He had a dream. He wanted to build a serenity house or a halfway house for people in that area. And he started on it. And he died of cancer. He couldn't complete it, you know. God called him on, and God's going to call all of us on. About 2 months ago, a group of us picked that dream up. And we started with it. We're incorporated. We're looking for 40 acres of land. We're going to do it in a big way, you know, like a drunk. We're going to have us a serenity house. It'll be a serenity house, Southeast Georgia. I'm not asking for any contributions tonight, unless somebody wants to give something. But we need your prayers. This is a need. If you can remember the drunks that you cared to treatment, and they've come out after 28 days, and they go back on the streets, and they die. Or they go back on the streets, they revolve. You know what I'm talking about, any of you? You understand. If you work in this thing, you'll understand. We lose a lot of them. They need a place to go. And I think that these that are well healed in AA and are grateful enough, I think by God they ought to give some. And I think we're going to give some in Southeast Georgia. We're going to build a serenity house. I don't know whether we'll build it this year, next year, 5 years, but God, I feel, is behind this work of ours. I made two talks, two meetings, and I had pledges of $15,000, you know. No, that's right. No, we're not taking pledges tonight. Thank you. I'll leave my card with you, though. That's right. Don't do it. Don't do it. No, please. But this thing's going to work. And if we build one in Southeast Georgia, we can build one in Southwest Georgia. We can build them all over the state, you know. There are a lot of them falling through the cracks. And I think this is our destiny, is to give some other people hope when we were given hope. We were asked to come, you know, when we come in this fellowship. Now, I hate to make this pitch tonight, but it was a good crowd, and I wanted to make it. Join me in prayer for that. The 23rd of June of this year, we're meeting in Nahanna, Georgia. Keith didn't know this. Maybe, did you know that? We're meeting in Nahanna for the first board of directors meeting, and this, we're going to kick it off. We'd like to ask all of you to come and be with us. We're going to have a dinner on the ground. We're going to have possum and armadillo on the hash shell, you know. We could eat. Alligator tail. By the way, Jackie and I have the largest... I hate to get away from this, but I'm through with that right now. We have the largest AA Al-Anon group in South Georgia, Southeast Georgia. I won't say that. We have AA, we have Al-Anon, we have Al-Teen, we have Al-Dog, Al-Cat, and we've got 300 alligators. Really? We own an alligator farm. I mean, this fellowship's done so much for me. I'm chairman of the Board of County Commissioners, and it's no big deal. But I own an alligator farm. I don't know what in the hell I'm doing with an alligator farm, but I own one. You know, the only one in the state with one. And next week, Jackie and I open up a minute market, Washateria, you know. Why not? We owe it to AA. We're going to put the money back in. See, you got to give. Like T.C. Hope says, you got two bowls. You receive from one and you give from one, you know. And if you wonder if you're not receiving something, you're damn sure not putting anything in the give bowl. What I'm trying to say is give. As the Master said, and you shall receive. Not ask, but give. Now listen, I'm sorry, did I talk over? That's good. Glad I did. I was trying to do that. I never had talked over before. Appreciate y'all coming tonight, and appreciate the committee again for inviting me in. And listen, if any of you ever over in Clinch County, that's the third largest county in the state, area-wise, population-wise, alligator-wise, we're probably first. But if you happen to be on U.S. 441 or 84 or 122, one of them highways out there, and you see that little blue light, you know, when they come up behind you and pull you out of there and put that meter on, you know, you get caught for drunk driving or speeding, please come on in the courthouse and pay your fine. We'd be glad to have your money. Thank you, and God bless you.